Hello, and welcome to episode 31 of Steering the Digital Scholarship. I am joined today by my ever-present co-host, Tim.
Hello.
And today we will be continuing our discussion about the biggest topic in the world right now. But first, our
classic... How to make your own sourdough bread?
Oh, yeah. That is actually a really big one.
Sorry, keep
going. But before we get into that, no worries. We'll start with our classic icebreaker question. This one is... pandemic themed, or more like quarantine themed, I suppose. If you could have any one thing delivered to your house right now, free of charge, without worry of infection, what would it be?
Oh, I tipped my hand when I talked about sourdough earlier. I think some flour would be great. I could go for a big old bag of flour. We made some homemade pasta the other weekend, and I hear all this stuff about bread, and I see a lot of pictures online about bread. So yeah, flour. Please send flour for research purposes. But yeah.
I saw this great recipe for making pasta without flour. It's just cheese mixed with, I forget what else it was. It was on Facebook. I think it's just cheese and egg. Like you mix grated cheese and egg, you flatten it out, and then you cut it into strips, and then it's like cheesy pasta.
Oh, wow. That's okay. That's marginally pasta. I would say that's just delicious cheese.
It certainly looks like pasta once they're done. Like you slice it up and then you leave it until it hardens and then you boil it like pasta.
Huh, very good.
And then you get cheesy noodles.
I think I would eat a bunch of that. That's fair to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Me as well. That's why I favorited it. I've got a whole list of things I see on Facebook that we've been working our way through, just cooking them all.
All right on. And then what would be your answer to this question?
Oh, I would probably ask for an ergonomic couch, a couch that I could sit on all day without my body hating me.
Oh gosh. Sounds like your home setup is not, it's finally betrayed itself to you.
I have moved to a new home setup that has like a nice lumbar pillow and a stiff chair and a flat table that's just the right height so that my elbows are at the right angles. Yeah,
oh,
I had to do the full conversion. My body was not pleased with me for sitting on the couch for 2 weeks.
I'm sure listeners would be interested to hear that many of our colleagues are going through similar situations. They went home at the start of this, bringing their laptop with them, but then not, you know, weeks on a laptop in a contorted position, you know, plays havoc on the spine and a bunch of things. And then they had to like go to campus to pick up, you know, mice and keyboards so that they could alleviate their setup a tiny bit. So it's less, you know, less hard on the back. And yeah, like I hear this a lot from different people now, sitting around in your basement on a couch or at a dining room table in a way that wasn't supposed to be sat at for, you know, 8 hours a day. It's finally catching up with people. So it's one heck of a thing as a consequence of this pandemic, let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like learning, I feel like people are ending up in far more ergonomic positions for their workspaces now than they even had like at work in their work, like in their offices.
Yeah.
Just because you can really feel it when you're going from one extreme to the other.
Well, we had the luxury of moving around a little bit, I think, before as like many workspaces and workplaces, you know, we have tons of meetings. So you're always shuffling at least during the day.
Mm-hmm.
But in a totally online environment, yeah, you're shuffling to the fridge and back. That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah. So my choice would definitely be an ergonomic couch that I could sit on without feeling, I don't even know if it exists. It might not.
Well, but, get the scientists in the lab. I think you're onto something here. You might have $1 million idea.
Oh, they would make a lot of money right now, I'm sure. So pretty interesting conversation there, but now we're going to move on to our main topic of the day, which is, what can we do? Today, we are going to continue our discussion on the tip-top topic in the world right now, the COVID-19 pandemic. As the number of confirmed cases continues to rise, it is easy to feel like things are happening on a scale that is so large that any efforts we employ are insignificant. Today, we're going to discuss not only how that is not true, but also what you can do from the safety of your home to help. So the number one thing, obviously, is to stay home. This may sound easy, but it is in fact one of the most difficult things to do in a crisis, as many of us are discovering.
And as we've seen in the news recently as well.
Oh, don't even get me started. No kidding, I could rant for half an hour. Spending days, weeks, and possibly months with minimal human interaction is tough. But it's very important that we do it. And I have a long-winded metaphor here that I'm going to read that I had one of those big brain moments that is likely not nearly as impressive as 2 days later as I thought it was in the moment.
All right, here we go. Strap yourself in, listeners. We've got we're going on a journey here.
Yeah, so here's my big metaphor of how I like to think of this current virus situation. And the way I think of it is as an invisible pyramid scheme that you get opted into without knowing. So like a pyramid scheme, it starts with one person. And as per the pyramid scheme model, they go out and they get 10 people in on the deal. Each of those 10 people recruit 10 people and so on. So 10 is an arbitrary number, of course. It could be any number of people. But also like a pyramid scheme, the first people who tend to get involved are your close friends and family. So when you get this great deal, you immediately share it with your friends and family who are close to you. And then, and I'm sure you can see where I'm going with this, is that it grows and grows out of hand. But when you think about a pyramid scheme, there are two main ways that a pyramid scheme is stopped. So if we're thinking about the virus as a pyramid scheme, there's two main ways that it gets stopped. The first way is generally when the government steps in and stops all of it at once. So the FBI figures out the whole layout of the whole scheme, tracking down everyone involved and stops it. In this metaphor, that would be the discovery and distribution of a cure. The other way is for people to stop buying into the scheme, either because they've caught on that it's a scam or because they have been warned about it. So basically, the less we interact with others, the less likely we are to be infected by the spread of the virus. So it's a bit of a long-winded metaphor.
Interesting. I'm following.
I feel like it tracks pretty well. So in order to stop this pyramid scheme that is COVID-19, we either have to hope for a cure and wait for the government to step in and solve the problem for us, or we just have to make sure that we make intelligent decisions in our day-to-day lives and not get duped into it by touching something somebody else touched by accident.
I think your metaphor also is very apt and spot on, but it also sort of extends to the growth rate of this, right? So like a pyramid scheme, grows exponentially because one person tells two people tell two people, and then it becomes four, and then four people tell four people. And then it's, you know, so there's this exponential growth that happens very quickly, which is also, you know, present in the virus, you know, the way it mutates, you know, it's not 100% exponential, but it is growing at a rapid rate if it's, you know, unchecked. So yeah, I think what you need to do is write a paper about this analogy and put it out there so that it belongs to you and no one else can steal it from you.
Well, we've got an official audio documentation of me saying it first, probably.
There it is, yeah.
And then how about we post this to the archive, and then it's public everywhere for everyone.
So remember me when you win your you know, Nobel Prize in science, okay? But I was here when it first happened.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'll be number two on the paper.
Nice. I'm in the top three. Excellent.
So that's my long-winded way of saying what you do is significant. So just for each person that stops, that's a whole branch of this pyramid scheme that ends. So if you take precautions and each person that would have gotten infected that doesn't get infected, that's a whole branch of the tree that just dies off. And eventually, if enough people do it, then critical mass rules say that it will die, hopefully.
Working on it.
We're working on it. So now, what can you do to help aside from just staying inside? That is both the easiest and hardest one.
Mm-hmm.
But other options. So the first one is something called folding. And I'm going to say, Tim, would you be able to tell our listeners about folding at home?
All right, I'm going to try my best. Please interrupt me and ask me questions as I go on, because sometimes I kick into defending my thesis mode where I just start talking in long sentences that don't make sense.
All right.
There's DNA and proteins in your body. That's hopefully familiar to most listeners. And when you start assembling proteins in longer sequences, they start to fold across one another into these very interesting geometric shapes. And these geometric shapes happen because of like the atomic forces within the molecules of the elements that make the proteins up have different sort of positive and negative charges. So you get these really interesting, complicated folding sequences. So if you, you know, I don't know the mathematics behind it, but if you take some DNA strings, put them together into some amino acids, and then you put some amino acids next to one another, and you just sort of swirl it about in primordial ooze, it will start to compress itself into this folded structure. So because organic chemistry is the study of, you know, proteins in the body, there's a lot of computer modeling exercises that sort of take different proteins, put them together, and then run a simulation to come up with what a protein folded using, you know, what a protein fold would look like with those primary pieces. So if you're clever in the way you construct your protein sequences and do the modeling, you can glean lots of great information about different things. So in the past, this has been, cancer research. So you can model how cancerous cells will be affected by treatments or how they would mutate and grow on their own. But most pressing and most useful for the world these days is that you can perform these simulations for research involving COVID. So there are some researchers that have this platform. They've put this platform together. Don't stop me now. This is leading up to something. Trust me.
Oh, I'm not about to jump in. You're doing great.
Okay, excellent. I have no feedback here. This is the one thing I've discovered about being online all the time. You never know how well you're doing because there's no one looking at you.
Fair enough.
So there has been a group of scientists that have come up with a platform or a piece of software that you can run on your home computer that does this folding simulation. And then it contributes back the research to the organization that put it together. So it's called Folding at Home. And it is very similar to another popular initiative listeners might have heard of that's called SETI at Home. SETI at Home is brought to by the people that are looking for extraterrestrial life. And basically you just take unprocessed radio telescope recordings on your computer and you analyze them. And then you hope to find aliens and then you send the results back to SETI. Folding at Home is a similar model, but it's for a different purpose. So you connect your machine up to a centralized server and it says, here, why don't you run this simulation on your home computer? And then when you're done, it'll shoot the information back to the central organization and then they can use that to do some analysis. So it's very interesting because for the home user, and Daniel, you can hopefully attest to this,
yes,
there's not much to getting it up and running. You just download the piece of software and then it will kick in as a screensaver. So if you're not using your computer, the Folding at Home platform will kick in. And if you set the parameters super high, you can hear your fan start going like crazy and your computer starts making a lot of noise.
Oh, but yeah.
When that happens, you can feel pretty good because you're helping, the global initiative to, combat COVID. So It's neat in that it's an easy thing to do for your for the home user. However, it is contributing to a global initiative that really needs the help. So, having said all of that, how does that sound as an initial description about folding?
That is an excellent description of folding. So, thank you for describing all the, like the meaning behind it, not just, hey, listeners, go download this app and run it on your computer. It's totally safe. So
it doesn't mine Bitcoin at all.
Yes, it does nothing of the sort. So yeah, absolutely. It's just a really easy install that that helps in a really significant way. There are, I think it's what, trillions or petillions or some large number of different tests that they need to run, different simulations. So every single person that helps is one less simulation that needs to be run on their supercomputers globally that are running these things.
What is really excellent about this is that a lot of people have taken up this sort of call or signed up for this initiative. So right when the pandemic started, there was, folding at home has been a thing for a long time, but people started to notice, and there were some ideas brought around about, let's all start doing some folding to help out with this. And for the first little bit, they didn't have any specific research studies that would use the folding to address COVID. So they were just saying, just keep running your stuff and we'll contribute how we can. So that had progressed, and maybe a couple weeks in, suddenly I'm looking at some press releases and information about the uptake. So the a combined workload of folding at home is now at something, a completely abstract number, 2.5 exaflops. And, normal mortals don't know what an exaflop is, and I certainly don't know what it is either. But put in other terms, it's stronger and faster amount of computation available through this folding at home platform than the top 500 supercomputers in the world all put together. So we can post it in the notes, show notes, but there's a very interesting bar graph. We're big into visualizations. Let's show tiny little blips of all these different supercomputers, and then the folding at home output towers above the rest of them, and is a large bar graph that just dwarfs everything else that it's being compared to. So it's been really great because people have actually taken up the call. It's interesting to see.
Well, it's understandable that people would take up the call because, like we're talking about today, everyone's stuck at home. Everyone's in this together. And everyone who's feeling like they can't do anything to help, everybody wants to get this resolved as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And because of that, sacrificing some of your computer's processing power while you're asleep, it's not a huge cost.
Oh, when you put it
cost.
That way, sure, yeah.
to have this whole situation end that much quicker. So for every person that does this, it might be like 0.001 seconds closer to the solution, but that's still something. And if a million people do that, then I don't know the math on that.
Yeah, you see, I kind of delved into a little bit of like the scale of these problems when I was back in school, right? And a lot of the analogies they use is like, it's a grain of sand on a beach is what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. There's just so many different spots or different things you can test or different sort of items in your search that it's like looking for a grain of sand on a beach. So it takes a lot of people working a lot of time, and then maybe you'll get something, right? So it's very impressive, the mathematics that's involved. If you really, we were talking about the pyramid scheme earlier and how it breaks your brain. You just imagine the brain breaking of thinking about the sheer magnitude of the problem space is, in the parlance of the platform.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think that's a good way to describe it, is that everybody is being handed a grain of sand to analyze.
There it is. Yeah.
From this massive coastline that is the hunt for the cure.
I think the analogy I'll borrow it's also on the folding at home website, is like each analysis is like buying a lottery ticket. So this might be the one, or it might not be, but most often it's probably not the one, but we're going to keep buying lotto tickets for this one.
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel, do you think we've set the stage enough for what this is now to make the hard sell to our listeners to get involved themselves?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's just foldingathome.org is the website, just so that we can get that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're so inclined, feel free to join our folding group, or start your own folding group, and then you can watch your rankings rise. And they give you a slight gamification of this, so that on top of just, you know, saving the world, you're also getting some sort of claim to fame out of it.
See, this is where I, you know, this is where I want to, you know, gamify it as much as possible, because you are indeed correct. There are teams you can sign up for, but Brock University has its own team, and we're encouraging our colleagues and everyone else, you know, that their home machines to sign up for the platform and then sort of subscribe to the Brock team, so we can kind of get a bit of camaraderie going here. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting is, you know, as most campuses computer, you know, as most university campuses have, there's a lot of computer labs at Brock. And since, you know, there's no humans in the campus, or, you know, fairly little humans, there's a lot of computers that are just sitting around idle. So through some, you know, speaking with our colleagues and getting the word out, we've signed up, or we've had the machines in the library space running this folding platform for a few weeks now. The computers in the physics department will also be, or have, are also running these simulations. And I've been in touch with the computer science department, and they're going to work on it soon. There's this sort of pressing exams are just finishing up now. And then once those are done, there'll be some more time and brain space for people to come up with projects for the summer. And one of them will be getting the word out on getting this more complete, mm-hmm. Or more completely across campus. So the other group on campus, I've been in touch with Central ITS about having it run on the general purpose computing labs that, you know, would probably bring in the most amount of machines into this. And I've even watched some email correspondence go back and forth with instructions being sent to different people, sort of outlining how the library set it up. So big shout out to Haley and Mitch for getting it running in the first place, and then sharing how they did that with Central ITS. So it's going to be really interesting. One day I'm going to check out that leaderboard, and it's going to have a ton of new machines and new cycles and new work being contributed. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually looking at the leaderboard right now, and it's pretty impressive, the numbers that we've got just from, it's been what, a month since since we've been working on this, and we've got, you get these credits just to track your progress, and some of the people that are underneath the Brock University folders have over 1 million credits already. That's the physics and Andrew Library.
Yeah, our colleague, I was talking to him about his home rig and why it was so powerful and cranking out so many, you know, folds. And he's got a newer machine with a really fancy video card. So it's neat to see that, you know, instead of playing Crysis, he's devoting some of his cycles to, you know, helping out with this, which is great. And his one machine is like really dominating our leaderboard, which is amazing. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, having said all of this, we'd like to encourage you to join up, even if, you know, you're listening to this at a later date. I'm sure the initiative will need help. So we'll have a link in the show notes to the landing page we've come up with that sort of describes how to set up and how to join the Brock team. And then also, if you want to be recognized or have your lab or other things recognized, we're happy to put your name on the page of sponsors and partners. And let's see what we can do with this. I think it'd be really, really great to have a good team spirit about this when it's literally a very, very simple thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you very much, Tim. I think this is one of those initiatives that's easy in and very valuable out.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay. So we'll just make a quick shout out to some of the other ways that you can help at home.
I help?
Yes. There's what our makerspace has been working on, mm-hmm. At Brock. They've been producing protective masks for, where, do you know where they're sending them off to?
I know it's the Niagara Health System, but I'm not sure exactly what, you know, if they're being diverted to a particular location, hospital or treatment center. So I don't have any details about that, but I definitely know it's our local health system is the, mm-hmm. one receiver.
So they've been running the 3D printers ragged, printing out masks, actually. So they do the clasp and then they put the plastic sheeting on it. It's quite the impressive operation they have going there. So not to say if you have a 3D printer, start printing masks, but something that you can do is you can make masks for your family out of just fabric, that sort of thing. Just anything that you, if you look online, there's a ton of ways to just make your family safer. And then there are donation sites where you can donate medical supplies, money if you want to, all that sort of thing to people who need it. And just help your community, because your community are the ones that you're going to have to live with after this. So do your part and make sure that you're helping out.
Well, on the it's more of a slow burn and it's going to be less immediately apparent, but you know, Brock, good kudos to Brock University, because they've, you know, created a fund and some incentive to perform COVID research. So, you know, faculty members on campus and researchers are right now going through the process of applying for these special funds to go towards COVID research. So it's really interesting to see it galvanizing in that kind of respect too. It's, you know, the locally at the, you know, individual level, but then also the institutional response that we see from our place of work to help, you know, motivate and get some research done on the topic as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's so much you can do. And one other thing that you can do to help is actually just mental health. So keeping, setting up communication methods between your family and friends, not just chat, but sometimes have weekly video calls or play online games together. Or you can just do games like, I know my wife did Pictionary with her friends recently, and that worked out really well. Or what I do is I play Dungeons and Dragons over video chat as well. And just having a scheduled weekly hangout with other humans, that alone is helping, because the less antsy and cabin fevery people get, the less likely they are to go out, potentially get infected, infect others, and so on. So making people happy and healthy at home is just as helpful as sewing a mask and sending it out to your local medical professionals.
Yeah, actually last night we were watching some streaming and the internet sputtered and sort of stopped. And then, you know, we very tentatively went to bed because it was late enough already. And then I was worried about, well, what's going to happen if my internet isn't back up by the time I wake up in the morning? I'm going to have to send a lot of emails to colleagues to say I can't work today because I'm only using, you know, packet data. So yeah, it is quite a lifeline. I mean, you know, the internet in general, and then using it to communicate with your pals and family is, you know, super important.
Yeah. So be friendly, help where you can. I think, unless you have anything else to add, Tim?
No, stay safe out there. That's pretty much all I care to say.
Yeah, just keep your friends close and your family closer, and help each other out. Keep the world safe. So this has been another great chat, but it's about time we drop anchor for today. So thank you for joining us on our voyage through these turbulent seas. If you have any questions or comments, please contact us at dsl@brocku.ca or on social media. Make sure that if you have the inclination to submit any and all interesting things to the Niagara COVID Archive, if you're local, or look for an archive project local to you, if you are not local to the Niagara region, and just help out in that way too. It really helps the future generations understand what's going on now. So these are tough times, but if we keep safe and stay the course, we will soon break through this storm to the sunny skies and seas ahead of us.